Welcome to Backmarker Podcast, episode one. This is the Formation Lap, people. Wow.
My name is Braden.
And my name is Raj.
We can get straight into it, but basically, because this is the first episode, really quickly, this is a podcast about F1 and everything surrounding that.
And a little bit more.
A little bit more sometimes. Today we will start off, of course, with the race preview of Monaco. It is this week's race. We'll talk a little bit about IndyCar. I'm going to give you a quiz. I'm not going to tell you what just yet, but I will be quizzing you on something.
Great.
Be prepared. And we'll go through some news, of course.
Yeah,
sounds good. Let's get straight into it. So, Raj, how about I start off, which is a little bit of like the details of what Monaco is, what the racetrack's like, what information we have for the upcoming race here in 2017. What we have here, I've got the circuit guide. It's going to be 78 laps. It's a circuit length entire. It's 3.3 kilometers in total each lap. So the total race comes to 260 kilometers. It's one of the oldest races in motorsport history, but it's definitely the oldest maintained F1 race, if I'm correct.
Correct.
I've been going since 1929, and how many gaps in there? Is that every single year since 1929? I mean,
no,
there's been a few gaps
due to the World Wars,
yeah,
and this, that, and the other. Because when it started, it was individual Grand Prix around Europe, right?
Mm.
There was this huge calendar around Europe. There was no centralized F1 championship at that stage.
No.
So it was just such a famous race that everybody wanted to keep it for F1, and so they did.
Still is, basically. Lap record is from last year. Lewis Hamilton in his Mercedes, a 1:17.939. But I think we're going to see that broken, of course, with the new regulation cars, of course, just being absolutely beastly.
Yeah, no, they'll smash it. Let's be honest.
So that's exciting.
I say 3 seconds at least.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Guaranteed.
So can I put you down as a prediction of? I'm going to write these down. By the way, we're going to do some predictions in a minute. But
oh, for God's sake!
Your first one, you're saying 3 seconds.
On paper for fine. Yes. All right. Approximately three second drop in lap time.
All right. Interesting. All right. I'm making a note of that. I guess we can get straight into predictions if you really want, or you want to talk about what are you expecting? Not so much predictions as to what you think where everyone's going to sit or where everyone's going to qualify. Any interesting? Like, do you predict an interesting race? What do you think of the race?
Look, it's Monaco is always interesting. It's no Indianapolis. There ain't going to be a huge amount of overtaking. It is one of the tightest, toughest tracks on the calendar.
Especially now that the cars are even wider, it's going to make it even harder hard overtaking.
And it's not difficult physically, as a lot of the tracks are. It's just difficult in terms of its technicality.
Yeah, one mistake, there's no runoff.
Exactly.
You're definitely out.
No runoffs, you just got walls. You need to be on it from start to finish. But let's get into the predictions. Let's do it now.
Yeah, do you want to go straight away? All right, before we get into podium, before we get into qualifying results, how many safety cars do you reckon? Because I'm going to put it down on paper. I reckon two safety cars.
Okay. I kind of want to agree with you, but no, you know what? I will go with one.
I'll
go with one.
Cool. I got two safety cars. I think there'll be one pretty much on turn one, and then I think there'll be one later because, I mean, there are enough drivers out there who either haven't raced at Monaco, but there is enough drivers out there that haven't raced in Monaco in these cars, anything like these cars. There's some newbies that if they make it past turn one in the first potential incident, by lap 30, 34, maybe even Jenson Button, an experienced person who's been out of the car for a little while, this is his first time in these new regulation cars, you know, that extra downforce, there's something different about these wide cars. You just tap a wall, need a safety car. It's not easy to get a F1 car off the Monaco circuit without calling a safety car. So I think two is not an unreasonable figure.
No, to be honest, it'll probably be more, but I don't want to say it's going to be a huge amount more.
There'll be seven safety cars. The race will take 7 hours.
Yeah, exactly. That's why.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping Red Bull will be able to compete a little higher up the grid.
A little bit like last year, except, of course, the awful no-tie situation for Ricciardo. If we can get rid of that...
Please don't talk about that.
Sorry, I had to bring it up.
Didn't have to bring
it up. Do you know what I should bring up really quickly? I probably should have done this earlier, but I'm going to throw it in already. What happened last year? So, of course, besides we've brought it up about what happened to Ricciardo, but Hamilton won because of that incident, basically. That mistake by Red Bull. Daniel Ricciardo comes second, but do you remember who came third? Perez.
Yeah, no, I do remember that, actually. Yeah,
very interesting sort of result there. So if that's anything to go by, then, I mean, I don't remember the last time seeing, except for last week. Actually, I take it back. Spain was the last time we saw three drivers from different teams on the podium, but it doesn't happen often enough in F1.
No, so, but this year it has happened, you know, I think twice.
Twice now, already. Yep. So maybe we'll see it again in Monaco like last year, which will be very exciting. I love seeing that. It's so much better than, you know, top
literally,
two in the same
I was
team,
thinking that last week. The fact that three colours on the podium, it just looks satisfying.
Mm, definitely. You know,
as opposed to two silvers and a blue or two silvers and a red.
Yeah.
Which is the formula that we're used to right now. I'm enjoying the difference in teams up on the podium.
Sure. What about predictions for qualifying? Who do you think is going to qualify on pole, basically?
Yeah. Boah. Oh, God, I sound like Kimmy.
It doesn't really matter.
I don't give a shit. But no, I'd say either... Oh, man. I don't know what
to say. I should
give
you some preparation
time. Vettel.
I was going to go Vettel as well.
Okay.
I'm actually going to stick with Vettel. I already wrote it down. So I think we're both going to go with Vettel there. Hopefully we're correct. Anything else from qualifying? Are you seeing a Ferrari lockout or, you know, same thing as we've seen the last few times, one and one, Mercedes-Ferrari, or something else?
I still think the best thing we can hope for in qualifying in terms of upsetting the front of the field a little bit is Red Bull getting up in that action.
Yeah.
Because I do think... They have enough downforce potentially to compete with them. Obviously, this year they are relatively low on downforce considering Adrian Newey's normal amazing creations. That being said, Adrian Newey didn't actually design this car at the start of the year.
We'll talk about that a little bit in news, but we can talk about it now. I mean, basically Adrian Newey came out and said, I didn't have as much input on this car as I would have normally had. And he's going to be stepping up to the plate a little bit more as the season progresses. So, I mean, Red Bull tend to kind of ease their way into the season a little bit, which is always sad. Hard to watch as a Red Bull fan, especially at the beginning of a season. But I've also seen earlier this week that apparently Spain was not super indicative of what they think they should be getting. And that's not just because of a bit of a power deficit. They think they made some mistakes in the, you know, on that weekend.
Yep.
So maybe if they, you know, they've had a few upgrades over the Spain sort of period, come into Monaco with those issues that come with those upgrades ironed out.
Indeed.
Hopefully.
Because they say they got about 0.4 of a second from those upgrades over the Barcelona weekend. I'm not even convinced they got that, to be honest.
I mean, Ricciardo had a pretty uninterrupted race. It's sort of hard to see how he was really racing that car with, you know, the fact we saw him on the screen for about 6 seconds overall.
Yeah.
I think we'll definitely see more of Red Bull, whatever that, you know, manifests itself as. Hopefully we just see more of them this weekend.
Yeah, and I think you may be on the money there, actually, considering their predictions before the upgrades came out was we're expecting 1.5 seconds. Mm. Generally speaking, engineers won't say something like that willy-nilly. You know, they will have some sort of evidence that they're going to be getting at least 1.5, if not more, right? Yeah. Generally, engineers tend to sandbag, not the other way around.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I have a feeling there is quite a lot to come from that package, and hopefully with Adrian Newey on the case, it'll happen pretty quickly.
If not this weekend, near future.
Indeed. And McLaren, by the way, apparently the upgrades came in Barcelona, again, were not all they were expecting, and they're going to bring out the big guns here in Monaco. We'll see
Jensen Button
that manifests itself.
To take the top step. That would be amazing. But anyway, that takes me to the next bit then.
Your official prediction.
No.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
No.
You said it.
That's a hope. Getting into the prediction though, podium, what do you think? You're 1, 2, and 3.
1, 2, and 3. I reckon Vettel will complete the job. Pole to win. And I think second will be Bottas. Third.
Ooh, interesting.
And get this, third will be Raikkonen. I believe Hamilton's going to have another terrible weekend.
Mm. He did not have a good weekend.
He didn't.
Last week. Though he won last week, you still don't seem like... He doesn't seem comfortable.
No.
Like, he was really driving that car to the end of his body's, like, ability to handle it.
Yeah. Listen to the radio, right?
Yeah.
I'm a little bit tired. did not sound like Lewis Hamilton.
And the week before, he was very much off his game. So, not even on the podium. So, it could translate into this weekend. We'll wait and see. I'm going to go a little bit different on the podium. I think we might actually see a Bottas on number one was what I was thinking.
I was literally just about to say, I think Vettel will win. Mm.
I want Bottas to win to keep him in the mix for making sure that, you know, Mercedes can't definitively say, all right, you're our number two driver.
Yeah.
The longer he stays as a potential, you know, rival to Hamilton, the longer it just stirs up the season. So I actually think he can win this one. I said Vettel's going to take qualifying. There's not going to be much passing, but something in the pit lane, something around a safety car, I see Bottas doing a good job. Even the Williams, I remember kind of thinking last year that he looked really good around Monaco for when I saw him. I think we're going to see a good race from him. In second, I did put Vettel, though. And third, I was going to put Hamilton. I think he'll have the off weekend, but I still think he will get up on the podium. So
okay.
And that keeps that podium there would be really nice to keep the
now, I want to see Bottas or Raikkonen win. That would be absolutely lovely. Purely to keep this championship getting more and more interesting, keep it alive, and avoid the two-horse race thing.
Yeah.
Because that is barely more interesting than watching two Mercedes drivers kind of fight it out. It's like, yeah, they're different colours, but I'd rather see more drivers, more teams get involved, and let's make this like a real championship. But
sure.
Yeah, that's my prediction for the podium. But what else can we predict? Who do you think is going to get fastest lap?
Oh, fastest lap is going to go to Bottas.
Bottas.
He's going to win and get fastest lap for me. Who do you reckon?
Raikkonen,
all right. Really quickly,
First to retire. Which cars have the Hondas in them again?
So you think a Van Dorn or a Jenson Button
Van
retiring?
Dorn or Button. It just has to be. Come on.
You have to choose one. I'm going to let you choose one.
Stoffel Van Dorn.
Van Dorn. All right. I was going to go with Palmer.
With Palmer.
Yeah. That's who I'm choosing for my first to retire. And a little one we wouldn't normally have, but where do you think Button is going to place, or how is he going to go this weekend? Because, of course, he's coming back to F1 for this weekend, which we didn't mention earlier, but he's taking Alonso's seat while he's off in IndyCar. Where do you think he's going to fall in the return?
Look, if McLaren's upgrades bring even close to what they were saying, in the points.
Wow. Okay,
yeah,
so
I'll
let you say points. I don't think he's going to finish the race. I think he'll qualify 12th, 13th, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Which is pretty solid for someone who hasn't been racing this year.
Yeah.
But I see him retiring maybe lap 36 with an engine reliability issue or, you know, something weird like that.
Wow. You must be one of the world's greatest psychics.
So I'm going to say retires and, you know, Q2. That's my prediction. You say points. I'll let you get away with that. Just saying points.
Look, we can all hope, right?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to see McLaren get back on their feet. They're one of the most important teams in F1. We need them.
We need them, but not yet.
No.
Anyway, what we can get into next, I think I'm going to take you through some news. So we both got news stories. We'll go through some news. All right. So, Raj, why don't you start us off with a news story?
Yeah, sure. Big news story this week, obviously, and this isn't F1 related.
Sort of F1 related.
Sort of F1 related.
I think I know what you're going to talk about.
Yep. Of course, you know what I'm going to talk about, the Indianapolis 500.
So, Raj, I've actually dedicated a little segment for you that we're going to go after this, some other motorsports stuff.
Indeed.
So, you're going to take me through all the Indy stuff, but is there news related to Fernando Alonso that's happened in the last little while?
Yes.
Okay, give me that.
Yeah, I'm just going to run you through what happened in qualifying.
Cool.
Alonso has qualified 5th for the Indianapolis 500. 5th out of 33
cars,
mind
you. Not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all. If you're first time around Indianapolis, that's actually a miracle in a way to make the Fast 9, which is the IndyCar equivalent
like
of Q3. Yeah, it's like a top 9 shootout.
Yeah.
Exactly. To make the Fast 9 on your first attempt is somewhat freakish. The other drivers are a little bit peeved, I think. But anyway, so he's qualified 5th, looking good to score some points, if not pull away the great win. And the top 5 is Scott Dixon in the number 1 position, 232.624 miles an hour. F1 fans may be a little confused about that.
So you qualify
on
your top speed or something? No,
you qualify by your average speed over 4 laps. But we'll get to that in the IndyCar segment later.
Yep.
Second was Alexander Rossi, former Formula One driver. Second was Edward Carpenter. Third was Alexander Rossi, who was actually the top F1 driver in the qualifying for Indy this year, by the way. He beat Alonso.
And didn't he win last year?
He did. He is last year's winner of
Indy
500.
I know one thing about Indy.
He did. He won it with a pretty brilliant fuel strategy. By the end of the race, he was essentially on fumes. It was literally going around at about 2 kilometers an hour. But He won the race.
It counts.
It counts. Third, sorry, one, two, three. Fourth would be Takuma Sato, another famous former F1 driver, indeed.
Yep.
And he is a Honda driver. These are
so he's Alonso's teammate.
Indeed. So okay. Scott Dixon, Alexander Rossi, Takuma Sato, and Fernando Alonso are all Andretti Autosport drivers.
I didn't realize they were all four of them were.
That was a brutal lie. Scott Dixon actually drives for Chip Ganassi.
Oh, okay. But three out of five.
But
for
Rossi,
your top five.
Sato, Alonso, all
crazy
race for the same team. So and Andretti has been very, very strong at Indianapolis recently. The Honda engine seems to be better than the Chevy around super speedways. So
you're hoping for the Alonso miracle.
I'm hoping for the Alonso miracle, indeed. But in other news, Sebastian Bourdais, the Formula F1 driver, had a massive accident.
Luckily posted that recovery image.
Indeed.
Today,
apparently he's alert, awake, yep. Feeling good. So
not racing this weekend, but
not racing for the rest of the season. Yep, exactly. Actually, it's been announced. His replacement is James Davison from Australia. Yes. But
I recognize that name from Supercars, of course.
Will Davison.
Yeah, so he's related to the Davisons of Supercars?
I don't know. I actually wanted to look that up yesterday.
I think he is. I read that.
Probably.
Let me just find that out. Yes. No, he's cousins. So the two guys, the two of them in Supercars, they're brothers.
Yeah.
And now this is their cousin. So.
Right.
Australian heritage running. Oh, sorry. Race car heritage running through that Australian family.
There you
go.
Petrol runs in the veins, I'm telling you.
Exactly. I guess I got a new story for you as well.
Yeah, go for it.
This one's not quite as it's a short story. Basically, Haas is going to be running their new livery as of Monaco this weekend. Slight change, even a little bit more grey and dull. Some people are saying, I think it looks pretty cool. Have you seen it? The black
with
a little bit of the red flare.
I don't know. Like, I like colours, so I'm not really a huge fan. I'll be honest with you. It looks a bit drab.
I think,
and it's literally coloured in drab.
Yeah,
mind you, but. Yeah, whatever. It looks okay.
I think the Haas livery they were running earlier this year and last year, I mean, it was still grey. It had a bit more colour to it, but it was still pretty much grey and black and whatever. I think at least now, if you're going to be that, do it really nicely. I think this is a nicer livery. It's not as interesting, but it's a nicer design. It's cleaner. I wish it was green or something, but, you know, that's me.
Well, hey, I just think Ron Dennis snuck into the Haas factory and replaced all their paints with contemporary graphite. That's what's happened here.
It's probably some strategy to, you know, camouflage into the road so you can't see the car coming up behind you or something when they overtake you, maybe. That's my guess, because it looks exactly like a street.
Yeah, potentially. Or
with a little bit of white for, like, the road painting, you know? That's about it.
Yeah. Or it's just part of the U.S. Army now.
Radio.
Whoa. Make America great again.
Oh, that's okay. The podcast, we've been one episode, Raj, and you're getting all awkwardly political.
Yeah. Well, you know me.
Yeah. All right. Next story goes to you.
All righty, people. There's been a pretty interesting story out recently about Liberty Media reorganizing the finances within Formula One.
All right. Really quickly. Anyone doesn't know who Liberty Media is, that is, of course,
the new owners of F1.
There we go. You're updated. Done. They own F1 now. They're doing cool stuff, we think, hopefully.
Well, we think. They want to test new cost control measures for 1 year with no penalties for non-compliance before official introduction. In other words, they want to trial out these new cost-saving measures for a year.
So that's like introducing a salary cap.
Essentially, yes.
Because I saw a similar article basically saying there were teams that have been speaking to Chase Carey in private, basically saying, keep us from outspending ourselves, please, by implementing a rule. Because
indeed,
they're not gonna themselves say, all right, guys, let's have a budget. They want to win. But they're going to spend as much as that takes. And if everyone else around you is spending a lot of money, you're going to have to spend a lot of money. So
exactly.
I think salary caps work in a lot of sports. I'll admit, I'm not a motorsport expert, you know. You're much more in depth. You've watched motorsports of all different types for a lot longer than I have. But what I know from watching traditional sports, American sports, Australian sports, salary caps are pretty much the norm in some form or fashion.
Indeed.
And of course, you're not spending money on parts so much. You're spending money on people's salaries. But, you know, is this what kind of result do you think you could get out of this kind of concept?
Well, look, the result that everybody wishes for is to have 10 to 12 teams on the grid, all fighting, and all able to challenge each other.
Sure.
We don't want a spec series. You know, that's what IndyCar is for.
Yeah.
But we need the cars to be closer together.
Less backmarkers.
Less backmarkers.
Well, more backmarker podcasts, less backmarker cars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If there's going to be backmarkers, we'll do that.
Yeah, we've got it covered.
That's our job. You guys need to race quickly.
How great would that be if, you know, we keep doing this podcast and one goes, we don't know what backmarkers mean anymore. Like, well, back in the day, they used to be less competitive. That would be an awesome thing to be able to say.
If we could redefine a word. Oh, that's success in a nutshell. But Liberty wants to present a plan to the teams in summer about how a budget could look. It should not be a simple cost ceiling, but a mix of several factors. One wants to limit the number of employees, the production costs, and the scope of tools. So it's going to be...
I don't like the idea that you're limiting employees. I think we should have as many people who can be afforded to work in F1 as possible, but I can see what you're saying, you know.
That's
within a reason, I could understand one way to cut costs would be that.
That is one of the ways to equalize the sport, though. To have too many... If you have double the employees at one team compared to another,
that will present
itself in lap time at the end of the day. So that's what this is for. But... Again, the Liberty influence is already being felt on Formula One. Just look at the crying Kimi boy.
You know, he
would never have been let into the paddock during Bernie's time.
Exactly.
It would never have happened.
No, that was really good to see, and hopefully we see a lot more like that.
No, indeed. Your turn, man. What's your story?
All right. This is just a little one. If you haven't seen this already, have you seen the guy that's going to the F1 season, the races throughout this season, and taking his photos with a 100-year-old camera?
I actually have.
Yeah. I saw a few of those posts going through the Reddit page, and a couple other people had picked some up. But basically, he's not just been doing a handful. Like, I thought he was just doing Spain. He's done a lot, and a lot of different styles of photos. Some of just drivers and engineers in the pits, like not moving cars. The ones that he's taken of moving cars make it look like really old school Formula One photos.
It was pretty cool.
It's a really cool sort of thing. But if you want to check it out... you can check it out on Instagram.com/lollipopmagazine. He's the guy doing it. It's really cool stuff. So this was more of a public service announcement about checking out some really cool, interesting pictures of F1. Because most of the pictures you see out there, you know, on multiple websites essentially look exactly the same. These look very different and very cool.
Indeed. They kind of look like... F1 cars from the World War One era.
Exactly. But
it's really
they've got
odd.
Great, awesome aerodynamics all of a sudden.
Indeed.
It's like, what is that futuristic-looking car
from
100 years in the future? It's great. I love it. Mm. We'll go back to you then. You got another story for us?
I've got more stories
for
us.
I'll press the button.
Pirelli are planning softer Formula One tyres for 2018. I don't know if you saw that.
So everything across the board? So even
the
super, super softs, ultra, mega, crazy softs, the like... What are they? Ultra soft is the softest. That's going to be softer again.
Ultra uber giga soft.
That's what they call it. Are they going to change the names? Because
no.
I have some interesting ideas.
Basically, the whole range of tires from hard down to ultra soft.
All going down one.
All of them are going to get softer.
Cool.
So
the mediums in Spain the other week,
mediums were next to useless.
Rolling around on concrete.
And you can imagine what the hard would have been like. Mm. Like, that wasn't even the hardest
tire. It doesn't take air.
Range.
It's just full-on rubber. It's all rubber. No air goes in those tires.
I'm just calling them Fred Flintstone tires, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, big, big, like, stone cylinders that just keep going round and round and round.
Mm.
However, I am glad about this. The fact that tires will get softer, it will increase degradation. It'll make the racing better. Lap times will go up. In fact, I wonder if they'll actually go up a fair bit more. We could be looking at another year of lap records being broken at
every
track.
Every qualifying
session.
Indeed,
if the tyres are that much softer, they will.
But you can only do one lap in it, maybe.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because what I want the ultra soft to be is like a quali tyre. Like back in the 80s, they had qualifying tyres that were so soft, they could get one lap on them before it's like, they're blistered, they're done.
Mm.
You have to get off them. I'd love to see qualifying.
Wouldn't that go against that earlier story we talked about, you know, cost saving in some... I mean, I don't know. Compared to how much it costs to run an F1 team, I'm sure tyres are not, you know, the number one cost. But if you were running a set of tyres every lap you're doing in qualifying, is that, you know, is that wasteful? Is that going to be something they bring up? I mean, there has to be a limit or a level of...
Indeed. Maybe keep a qualifying tyre for the top 10 shootout only, you know?
Yeah, okay.
You use normal race tyres for the first two sessions, then the top 10 shootout, you bring out the qualifying tyres and let the best drivers for that weekend go at it on the softest rubber.
Yeah.
That's probably a pipe dream, let's be honest.
Well, look, I think at some point this season we'll definitely need to have a conversation, debate maybe ideas for what we could see as a potential qualifying mix-up, what we would do to make qualifying more interesting. But that is a discussion for another day. I have another quick news story for you. This is a good one. Pastor Maldonado rears his head again and says, I have turned down an F1 seat for this year because the seat offered to me was not competitive enough. Raj, I'm sure you've already read this one because we are up to date on all the Pastor Maldonado news.
I have. I'm really disappointed that you
stole the news
story.
Oh, sorry,
I did
mate.
Like a Toto smash on the desk. Oh.
What did you think about this? Because he says the Venezuelan was replaced by Kevin Magnussen at Renault a couple of years ago, beginning of last year. And he said he was trying to make his comeback, but you know he didn't want a non-competitive seat. He wanted to make sure he crashed into those walls in the best possible car.
Yeah, I was about to say. I was about to say, what does non-competitive mean?
Do you think this was...
Who do you reckon offered him the seat?
I don't think anyone did. I think he's lying. Him or his management or whoever, you know, made this comment. If he made it directly, I haven't fully got into it. Wherever this comment came from, I think it's full of crap. I think there might have been a conversation and he reached out to say, hey, Toto, I heard Rosberg's retired. You need a person, and they maybe humored him for half a minute. And I don't think anyone's really given him a seat. I don't see that as a possibility. He doesn't have the sponsorship he used to, as far as I'm aware.
He definitely doesn't. Well, he doesn't have that $46 million
a year. He has sponsorship, but not that kind of sponsorship.
Yeah.
So,
no.
Even the smaller teams, maybe he would have taken some money as a bit of a pay driver. I don't see him being a better option as some of these other guys that have some money to spend on an F1 seat. So,
yeah, to be honest, he's got to be full of but he's got to be. Think about it. $46 million, a lot of money, yes. But if he does $30 million per year worth of damage to a car, you're basically left with nothing. He was a fast driver in his day. He's nowhere near consistent enough. He's
probably
like,
won't see
like
him again.
Julian Palmer, he shouldn't be in Formula One.
And he's not, luckily. Do you have another news story for me, though?
I do, actually. Right. I have one quick one.
One quick one.
So this is a tweet from Toby Gruner. The FIA deadline...
Wait, who's Toby Gruner?
Toby Gruner is a motorsport journalist from over in Europe. The FIA deadline for change of engine supply in 2018 has passed without notice from McLaren. No switch to Mercedes.
I did see this. The article was in a different language, so I didn't actually get a good read of it because Google Translate was being a bit weird for me.
Indeed.
But basically, does that mean it's physically impossible? Like, it is not at all possible for them to swap? Or is it, like, not possible within the traditional channels that you need to go through to get this done?
Look, I've seen weirder things happen in Formula One before. Like, other rules be broken that you'd think
stretched.
Are very, very important. That being said, though, if that deadline passes, then it's pretty much an expression of intent to Honda that they intend to stay with them.
I don't think it's as surprising. I mean, I think that since Honda's now signed up with Sauber, or, you know, Sauber signed up with Honda, rather, I think that probably gives McLaren a little bit of hope to say, all right, well, at least you've got two extra cars out there every weekend. Do some more testing, more data, hopefully more reliability, more speed. Hopefully
indeed.
That's what that result is going to be, because if that happens, then we're also going to see a more competitive Sauber as well. So,
yeah.
Overall, we want to see Honda do well, because... You know, it's fun for a couple of punchlines, a couple of shit posts on Reddit, and then all of a sudden you're like, it really sucks watching just cars pull over to the side of the track.
Yeah, and it sucks watching a manufacturer with the pedigree of Honda
and McLaren
struggling so much. Like, I'm used to back in the days where Honda made the best engine in Formula One.
And McLaren came out made championship cars.
Back in the 80s turbo days, McLaren were making championship-winning cars, yes. To the point where it was Williams who got the Honda originally, and McLaren had to steal it off them. They were not pleased about that, but Honda needs to get back to that position. They're one of the world's greatest engine manufacturers, and I know that the executives are not pleased about this.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm hoping eventually we'll see a nice, quick Honda.
Nice. I got one really quick story, just because it's the weird side of F1.
Sure.
The man in Germany sentenced to blackmailing the Schumacher family.
Yeah.
You saw this, right?
Yeah.
I don't quite understand. Like, he didn't really have anything other than, I want some money or I'm going to kill your children? It's pretty awful. One of the threats, of course, surrounded Mick Schumacher, his son, Michael Schumacher's son, who's racing in Formula 4?
Formula...
Formula something?
Formula 3, I
Formula 3 now?
Year.
I'm not sure. Yeah. So... It's pretty weird. I just thought it was kind of like a really awful thing to be doing, especially, you know, a legend of F1, but also like a guy who's going through a lot, and his family, of course.
Yeah.
It's the worst of times for shit like this to be happening. But he's been arrested. We don't know his name. It's just all privacy laws in Germany where he's been arrested. So
he sounded a bit mentally ill, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what the justice system does. It's obviously terrible. No one enjoys that, but I think a lot of people on the F1 fan side of things have just been saying, oh, we should stone him to death, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
blah.
So I mean,
you know nothing about this guy's life.
This is, it just came out of nowhere. It's not like this has been like, you know, we're finally after a manhunt and all this. It's just like some crazy dude has sent some awful stuff to a family going through terrible things, and that's awful all around. So
pretty much.
Thoughts always go out to the Schumacher family, which I just remember, like I just read at the end of this article, continues to undergo rehabilitation in Switzerland after that hinge injury way back in 2013. Look, we've got to keep hoping, I guess.
Keep hoping, yeah. But look, neurological injuries are never good.
No, we really don't know anything. We shouldn't speculate. We really shouldn't speculate.
We really shouldn't.
Let's get into something a little happier. I think you've got we've got a bit of a quiz. I've got some questions for you, actually. You're going to be taking the first F1 related quiz on the Backmarker podcast.
Great.
All right.
Oh, no.
All right, Raj, for the first quiz we're doing, I'm going to be asking you the questions.
Okay.
I've gathered, it's pretty simple. You just need to tell me, I'm going to give you a year. Mm-hmm. Between, what have I got, 1950, so going back to
the first
F1 world champion,
okay.
All the way till last year. I'm going to give you a year, and you're going to have to tell me, what do you remember, who do you remember being the driver champion? Not necessarily, if you get a bonus point, I'll give you a bonus point if you tell me what car they did it in.
Okay.
What team they did it for.
Right.
But you'll get a point for every person, and you get a bonus point if you get the car, which some of them are pretty easy, but anyway.
All right, let's go.
I'll go really, really simple to start with. 2012
would be Sebastian Vettel for Red Bull Racing.
All right, 2 points. That was too easy. I'm going to jump straight to a hard one.
Okay.
Your warm-up's done.
Yeah. Great.
1971.
I believe this might be Emerson Fittipaldi. Possibly for... Oh, God, I don't know the team. And I don't even know if that's right.
You are 1 year off. He did it the
year
after.
1 year off. Damn it.
He did it in 72 in a Lotus. Yeah. Jackie Stewart did it that year in a Tyrrell.
Tyrrell?
Is that how you say that, Raj?
Tyrrell.
Tyrrell
right.
Racing Team. That's correct. He did it in 71. So I'm going to give you half a point, though, because you got me the 1 year away. I'm giving you being nice. Half a point. Who won the very first in 1950?
1950, that was Giuseppe Farina.
In
an Alfa.
Oh, 2 points.
Hey.
2 points. I would have got 12. I would have got 2012. That's all I would have got, to be honest. You know your history better than me. What about 1992
would be...
Oh, he's counting backwards.
I know.
This is a very visual, very visual medium, the podcast, but I can tell you right now, he's counting backwards on his fingers.
Ayrton Senna, 1991. Ayrton Senna, 1992. Yuka Bagger.
No, Yuka Bagger, the famous F1 champion that we all remember.
F1 champion.
No, you got the other two, right? 91 and 90.
Let me think.
All right.
Is it Nigel Mansell?
It is.
Yeah.
Do you know who he did it for?
Williams.
There, yeah. Very good. You are. Jeez. That's crazy. All right. 1995, the year I was born. What happened the year I was born?
95. All right, let me keep counting up, right? So 92 was Mansell. 93 was, I'm not even sure. 94, Schumacher. 95, Schumacher.
For?
94?
No, for who? Who did he win
for?
For
who? Benetton.
Oh, jeez, this is crazy. You are 100%. What year were you born?
89.
89, who won that year then?
Who won in 1989? That would be, the guy between centers. Alain Prost.
Four.
McLaren.
Very good. Wow, okay. You've only got really one, only just off. I don't even know what to give you. 2006.
2006 would be Fernando Alonso.
Jeez, all right. Well, this is ridiculous.
For Renault.
I thought this would be a lot harder for you.
Yeah, well, I'm smashing it, man.
I'm going to give you a really obscure one that I really don't think you'd be able to get then. All How about 63.
63. Let me think here. 63. It could be Phil Hill or Graham Hill. One of the two Hill brothers. The Hill.
Again, I'm going to give you half a mark because you're only a year off. That was 92 with Graham Hill. It was Jim Clark in 63 in a Lotus again.
Jim Clark in a Lotus. So what, was Phil Hill 61?
Phil Hill was 61, then Graham Hill 62.
Graham Hill straight after.
Yeah.
Come on.
Look, I'm going to stop there because obviously you're pretty damn good at this. That's been proven.
I'm a mad nerd. What
in total, you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 of them correct for both driver and who they did it for. So that's 12 points there, and I'm going to give you the two half marks. So you get 13 points.
13. Woo!
I don't know what we're going to do with these points, but I've tallied 13.
Out of? How many questions do you ask me?
I asked you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 questions.
Out of 16.
So a potential 16. So that's not bad. Those half points definitely helped you.
Yep.
I guess we'll get on to some other motorsports news and what else. And you're going to give me a rundown of IndyCar. I've got some questions for you.
Yep.
This segment is other motorsports news outside F1. Of course, we can't go past the biggest one of this weekend coming up, which is the Indianapolis 500.
Woo!
Let's just pretend I've never really watched an Indy race, which isn't totally true. I have watched Indy street racing.
Yeah.
I watched a whole race on YouTube once. It was interesting, but I really didn't know much about the people there, the teams.
Yep.
I know what the Indianapolis 500 is. It's a circular track, an oval racetrack.
It is.
500 miles. It's the big race of the year.
It is. In IndyCar, there is one big race of the year. And for the rest of the year, people don't even really watch the championship. But for the Indy 500,
everyone's
the largest sporting event in the United States.
That can't be right.
It is.
Super Bowl.
In terms of single day attendance, it beats Super Bowl.
Okay, so you're not talking about television necessarily.
Not. Because the people on television watching would be a lot greater for Super Bowl, but for the purposes of this race.
I've seen the Indy 500. It's just the whole thing is crowds.
It is.
And it's just, it looks like hundreds of thousands of people. And it's an amazing
sight.
It is.
Well over 300,000 people.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
Wow.
It was founded in 1911. And pretty much every single year since then, we've had an Indianapolis 500. As I was telling you the other day, it predates the formation of Formula One by 40 years, just to give you an idea.
Well, Formula One is a championship.
Formula One as a sport, as a sport, championship, as anything.
Yeah,
it's one of the first races in the history of the automobile.
Crazy.
All right, guys? It's a big race. And as Fernando Alonso says, it is biggest race in the world. So
that was a really good Alonso impersonation.
Thank you, sir. Biggest race in the world.
Now you went a bit Russian there. That wasn't a Russian Alonso, but all right.
My name is Fernando. Yes, I am a Russian.
Okay, my question then, comparing to an F1 car, just what are the speeds you're getting around the Indy 500 on average, or what do you expect?
Look, during qualifying, they're pulling a good 370 kilometer an hour average lap speed. So unbelievably quick and about 40 kilometers an hour faster than F1 cars of this year.
Wow.
So they are little rockets. They say during qualifying, they essentially trim the car down to nothing. There's pretty much no downforce on the car and there's a bomb strapped to the back and they need to go flat chat for four laps. And it is, anybody who knows anything about IndyCar will tell you, the hardest four laps that any driver will drive in their motorsport career. The four laps for the Indy 500 qualifying are the hardest. Like, every single input you put into the steering wheel, you can feel the car shuddering. But I mean, in terms of the cars, how are they different? So
are they different in terms of like aerodynamically, engine-wise?
Yes.
What are these? Because cosmetically, I can tell the difference. Like it is noticeable when you look at it.
Yes.
Aerodynamically, how much does that affect the cars?
Aerodynamically, the difference is massive. The difference between IndyCar and Formula One is absolutely massive. Their budgets are a lot lower.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person on the grid is using a Dallara DC-12, I believe, chassis.
Okay.
So they're all using the same chassis. Their top speed outstrips Formula One completely, but their average lap time around a normal road circuit or a permanent kind of racing circuit would be about GP2 speeds. Okay. About Formula 2 speed.
Sure, sure. Because I've noticed that the one race I've really watched from beginning to end, they didn't look like they were going as fast as an F1 car. They kind of looked...
No.
I mean, the street circuits looked like they were running around a Formula E track, but at the speeds of a GP2 car or something like that. So
yep.
That's just because they're really designed to go spinning around ovals.
Well, I mean, they're in two different setups. So there's an oval setup, and then there's your road circuit or your street circuit setup.
Sure.
There's two completely different aero kits released by either Honda or Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm.
And next year, it's actually all changing, but we'll get to that in a second. The cars have, as I said, either a Chevy or a Honda engine. The Chevrolet is actually made by a company called Ilmor, which F1 fans may remember as... the company that Renault hired to fix their piece of crap engine, which they did really, really well. And then Renault got rid of them, and their engine has since turned into a piece of shit. Oh, funny that. Ilmor, one of the greatest engine manufacturers in the world. It is a V6 2.2-liter twin-turbocharged engine, runs at about 12,000 RPM, generates approximately 500 to 700 horsepower, depending on the setting.
Okay, so comparing that to a 2017 F1 car?
Yep.
What's the noise like?
What's the noise like?
I mean,
the noise
is different, louder. What are we looking at?
Louder, more guttural.
Yeah.
Because it is 12,000.
So it's not like the
V10.
Oh yeah, of course. So it's not like that V10 era like whining noise you get from an F1 car. It's the guttural like.
It wasn't. You know, it wasn't like the F1 V10 era in the sense that it didn't like grab your eardrums and rip them physically out of your head.
But it sounds much more like a motor, like a. A motor's motor.
It does. Yeah, sounds like a motor's motor.
Yeah. That's
sounds like a V8. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But they are very, very quick cars. They run on E85R fuel, Sunoco.
That's nonsense to me, but okay.
Ethanol.
All right.
Runs on booze.
That's interesting. That is very American. That's something I'd expect from like your NAS cars, you know, like... Well,
they run on ethanol as well.
Exactly. So that's like your real Prohibition era moonshine running style cars. And then they're like, we should race these.
Yeah.
What do we put in the back? Moonshine. We've got a lot of moonshine.
Moonshine is the best beer.
Yeah, exactly. Quick question then. You did mention it's the, you know, two teams basically. Similar to what, like, I guess the V8 supercars, if you're an Australian racing fan, would recognize as the Holden Ford sort of.
Holden versus Ford
I mean,
thing.
Of course, you know, Chevy and Holden have that kind of relationship and, you know, all that. But that is it kind of like what the rivalry you have in supercars in Australia? Is that what you get when you go to an Indy race? You've got these two people, you're going for teams and races more like you are in F1. Who should I be cheering for? Should I just
look,
be standing there cheering for Chevy or what should I be
doing? Put it this way. So in Australia, we have a very big Holden versus Ford kind of thing,
yeah,
even though
the
there are Nissans and other stuff in V8s now.
Volvo.
But yeah, there's no real Honda versus Chevy rivalry, purely because the championship isn't actually that old. It was founded in 1994.
Okay.
The Verizon IndyCar Championship, as it's known, was only founded in 1994. Before that, you had karts and IndyCar. There was two separate leagues. Essentially, yeah, what can I say? There's no real rivalry there. People generally go for the team, either Chip Ganassi or Penske or Andretti or whoever.
Yeah, okay. Similar to F1 then. You have a team, maybe
you
have a driver.
Maybe
they don't
a
necessarily
driver.
Have to be the same, but that's sort of where you're focused. Okay, cool.
Correct.
No, I was just curious.
All good. but yeah, the Indianapolis 500, as I said, one of the oldest motor races in the world. It is the biggest race pretty much in the world. I just want to give you some stars' names to look out for on the weekend.
Because
yes,
all
I'm
really
to watch it.
Focusing on is the Australian in there. Of course, you got Davison.
Davison. Yeah, he's one Australian, but the guy you should be focusing on, friend, is Willpower.
Willpower, which is definitely a race car name.
Yeah, he does sound like a motor racer, right?
Oh,
he is a champion.
Okay.
He's
of Indy 500. Of the Indy 500.
Not of the Indy 500.
An Indy champion.
But an Indy car
champion. So he's not won the 500.
No.
Where did he qualify? Do you have that information?
Willpower? I don't actually know. The Penskes have been struggling a bit this year, to be honest, because the Chevy engine is nowhere near as good as the Honda on super speedways anyway. Mm. On road and street circuits, it seems to be a lot more even. But yeah, the top nine out of the fast nine, one of them was Chevy.
Okay, so so the other Australian, he's...
In fact, that one Chevy was Willpower.
Oh, okay,
so
he's
somewhere
top
in the top nine.
Outside
he's somewhere
the
in the
five.
Top nine.
Six, seven, eight, or nine.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I'd say probably number
full
nine.
Full of facts here at the Back Market Podcast.
Also, a couple of other names you want to look out for are Scott Dixon, who is a 3 times IndyCar champion. He's a Kiwi, by the way.
Oh.
So for any Aussies out there, feel free to not go for him or just take the piss out of him. Helio Castro Neves, a fast Colombian. He's a 3-time Indy 500 champion. He is the king of that circuit. He seems to be, incredibly quick no matter the circumstances, but he's in a Penske this year, which means he's got a Chevy in the back, so he's really up for it this time if he wants to make himself a 4-time Indy 500 champion, which is a very rare and exclusive club, I might add. Tony Kanaan, Joseph Newgarden, Takuma Sato, Sebastian Bourdais. Unfortunately, you won't be able to see him on the weekend.
I got to really quickly interject.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry. I just Googled the Indy 500 because I was trying to find out what time it's on this weekend.
Sure.
Breaking news. And by breaking news, I mean you're listening to this in a podcast form, so it's really not breaking to you, but it's breaking to me. Scott Dixon, the guy you just mentioned, was robbed at gunpoint hours after winning the Indy 500 pole.
Holy... What
so
the
I this was not news I was looking for, but we're full of breaking news here on this medium you'll listen to post this recording. But the 36-year-old New Zealander was in a car with, tell me if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Brighton Dario Franchitti?
Dario Franchitti.
Oh, I was close. Who is a 3-time Indy 500 winner.
He is. One of the greatest IndyCar racers in history.
When the incident happened near the speedway, neither Dixon nor Franchitti...
Franchitti.
I said it twice. Franchitti.
Franchitti.
The two boys were arrested. They were 15 and 14 for attempted robbery. Or actually, I think they actually robbed. They got the robbery done, but they got caught.
Why would Scott Dixon give a crap about
gunpoint?
Anyway.
Wow.
Wow.
That's crazy.
He did just win pole for the 500, though. I doubt that would have even made my
actually.
Mood
I've also noticed
a
that
little.
You get a trophy for winning pole. Like I hope that he got like they didn't rob him for the trophy. That would have sucked. But anyway, any final thoughts on IndyCar before I watch? Probably I will be watching the Indy 500 this weekend. I got to work out what time. I think it's on quite early in the morning here in Australia.
Is.
So I'll watch it probably the next day, and keep my social media and like internet off until I can watch it, so I can ensure there are no spoilers, especially if something like a Fernando Alonso victory happens. But
indeed.
Before I wrap it up with you, can I quickly get a prediction on Fernando Alonso? Because this is still an F1 podcast. I don't care who wins, really, like if it's some other bloke, but where do you think Fernando sits? Do you think he gets a? Do you think he wins? Do you think he gets a podium? Do you think he crashes into the wall? What do you reckon?
I reckon if he can keep out of trouble for the first, let's say, 30, 40 laps...
He's going to finish.
He has a good chance at finishing and a good chance at winning.
Sure.
But mind you, it does depend on the start. Mm. Everything.
And it's a rolling start, of course. That's one
it
thing
is
we should mention
about IndyCar. It is
a
rolling start in IndyCar. It is, by the way, at Indianapolis, a little bit different. It's 11 rows of 3 cars each.
Mm-hmm.
So the 33 cars are all packed into 11 rows. So the first couple
of
laps
to stop them crashing,
are...
basically. Like, stop them just immediately crashing on lap one, which they might still, but... If you had a standing start, there's a 33 cars. Is going to something's going
to
go wrong.
Yeah. Well, look, they used to have standing starts in like Indy in kart racing stuff like that. But it went. There were especially on ovals.
Mm.
It went horribly wrong.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You can imagine, right? You've seen it in Formula One when a car stalls on the grid and suddenly they're waving yellow flags and everyone is trying to get around this one guy on an oval track where you've got a huge amount more power. There was no way to get out of the way and it suffered. They're thinking of bringing back standing starts for street circuits and road courses, but they're not going to bring it back for ovals. Next year, by the way, the differences happening are Honda and Chevy are only going to be making the engines, no aero kits. The aero cats.
So that's team specific?
Yeah, it's IndyCar wide. So you can either choose a Honda engine or a Chevy engine.
But
they don't give you the aero
the
kits. Yes. Okay. There's a universal aero kit.
So it's bringing the teams even a little bit closer.
Indeed.
So a lot different to what you see in F1.
Different. It's one of the closest single-seater categories on the planet.
So
and
you're,
trying to
you
make
are
it
really
closer.
Watching this, I mean, compared to an F1 race, where F1 you're watching not only the racing, but you're watching a great feat of engineering, like an engineering fight.
Yeah.
While it's IndyCar, you're really watching the racers race. For the most part. I mean, there are little bits of differences that the teams will definitely affect, pit stops, all that sort of thing, but you're watching the race.
Pretty much.
And the drivers.
I mean, as F1 fans, we can be a little bit snobbish. Like, to be frank, if you were to drive an IndyCar, you would think it was pretty damn fast.
Mm.
But they are nowhere near as quick as Formula One cars around a road circuit.
Sure.
But
it's a different kind of thing. I mean, comparing apples and oranges.
Exactly,
really.
Right? This isn't about F1. It's about racing.
Yeah.
It's about entertainment. And trust me, they do it really well. Have a look at the Indy 500. See if you like it. I will be
watching it this weekend, 100%. My quick prediction for Fernando Alonso, knowing very little about IndyCar, but yeah, having watched highlights of qualifying
things, you're probably going to be closer than me.
I think he's going to get a podium, but I don't think he's going to win.
Okay.
I don't think Indy want him to win. I don't think they want this, you know, international driver coming in and stirring up their championship like that. I think it's really good for the Indy 500's publicity to have an entire F1 audience turning after they switch over from Monaco. They're going to go, cool, now I get to watch Alonso do something. But I don't think they're going to want all their drivers and all their teams stood up by a guy who's never raced an IndyCar before.
Yeah, of course they wouldn't, but they won't even really have a choice.
No, I'm not saying they're going to have a choice, but I think even the other drivers, they're going to be motivated to go, look, whatever Fernando comes, we can't let him win because we can't let this newbie come in and just take, you know. So I think he's going to have a really tough race. I think he's got the ability to do well. I just can't see a win on your first ever attempt just seems insane.
He has a target on his back. Believe
me.
All the Chip Ganassi guys, all the Penske guys, they all want to beat Alonso. They want to be the guy who beat Alonso. And of course, every single person on the grid, including his teammates, want to be the guy who beat Alonso. Oh, also, part of my prediction, I should change it ever so slightly. If he gets to the last 10 laps, that's a different story. I'm pretty sure if he gets past the first 20, he'll make it to the last 10.
Mm.
Will he make it through the last 10 laps at Indy? That's essentially like tossing a coin with about 85 sides. Like, there is a lot of different outcomes
here. It's
more
of a dice, but I understand.
A dice,
I understand the metaphor.
A coin. Yeah, well, it was a crap metaphor, but I'm glad you understood it. He's going to have a rude surprise in the last 10 laps. Let's just put it that way, where everything will pick up. And no one is going to give him the time of day. And if anything, they're going to be attacking him more because he's Fernando freaking Alonso.
All right. Well, I'm excited. I'm going to be watching next week. Of course, we're going to bring you the race review of Monaco. But we'll also do a little wrap up of the Indy 500 and what went on there. That was a really good first episode. I think, Raj is giving me a signal. What do you need? What's up?
Hey, got one thing to say. Just got one last thing to say on a bit more of a somber note.
Mm.
2006 MotoGP world champion Nicky Hayden was taken to hospital in a serious condition where he unfortunately has passed away today
from
a head injury.
The 23rd today here in Australia. That's when we're recording. So,
indeed.
Very sad news. It's just a reminder. I mean, motorsports is a dangerous one. He died on a bicycle.
He died on a bicycle. He got hit by a car.
Not a motorcycle, like just a bicycle. You know, when you see Schumacher, which we talked about earlier, skiing incident, you know, these guys put their lives on the line. You saw injuries during qualifying in Indy, serious stuff. So he's hoping to a good race weekend and nothing bad happening over across the world of motorsports.
Indeed, but our thoughts are with the Hayden family. We're praying for you. Anyhow, let's move it on.
Yeah, look, I think we did a really good job on the first podcast. Let's quickly remind everyone, you can follow us on Twitter. That's Backmarker Pod. We have a Facebook page, Backmarker Podcast, and of course the website, backmarkerpodcast.com, where you can find this and all future episodes, and we will probably be posting some other F1 related stuff that we find on those places. So check it out, and of course subscribe to us on iTunes. I'm working on getting us on iTunes. If you're listening to this, you are probably on iTunes. Give us a subscribe and a rating. We really appreciate it. Have a good week, Ron. See you next week. We can talk more about F1.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Braden. I'll see you next week.